This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Democrat Arlen Specter loses seniority in the Senate. There's a new ranking member on the Senate Judiciary Committee who will get to grill whoever's nominated to replace Supreme Court Justice David Souter. Oye, oye, oye. It's Wednesday and time for another visit with the political junkie.
There you go again.
When I hear your new ideas, I'm reminded of that ad. Where's the beef?
Extremism in the defense of liberty is no vice.
You don't have Nixon to kick around anymore.
Lipstick.
But I'm the decider. Ah!
On Wednesdays, NPR political editor Ken Rudin joins us to talk politics. As usual, there's plenty to cover. The death of quarterback congressman and cabinet member Jack Kemp. There's a new mayor in Detroit for a few months at least. The governor of Maine signs a gay marriage bill. The governor of New Hampshire, still thinking about it. Governor Charlie Crist may run for the Senate. Former Pennsylvania Governor Tom Ridge may take on Arlen Specter. In a few minutes, we'll focus on the politics of picking and confirming a Supreme Court nominee. Former Senator Alan Simpson will join us. But we begin, as always, with a trivia question. Political junkie Ken Rudin's with us here in Studio 3A. Hey, Ken.
Hi, Neil.
What's the question this week?
Well, as you mentioned, Jack Kemp passed away Saturday night. He was 73 years old. It's hard to imagine Jack Kemp being 73 years old. You always think of him as so youthful and everything. Anyway, Jack Kemp ran for president, and he ran for vice president. He served in the House. And he served in the cabinet. Name the last person who accomplished all four of those things.
So it's a quatrifecta. If you think you know who ran for president of the United States and vice president, served in the House of Representatives and in the president's cabinet, give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. The first person to come up with the correct answer, of course, gets a fabulous no prize. And, we talked about Jack Kemp, but he was one of those figures in politics who really appealed to people from both parties and from outside politics as well.
Absolutely. And, you know, you think of the things that he was best known for. He was best known, of course, for the tax cuts, the supply side economics that he pushed in the late 70s, well before Ronald Reagan was elected president. And he perhaps was the godfather of that movement. At the same time, he also pushed for more inclusion of African Americans and other minorities into the Republican Party.
Enterprise zones
when he was president Bush's secretary of housing and urban development. He pushed for those kind of initiatives as well, which was also out of step with many in the Republican Party.
And of course, many remember him as Bob Dole's running mate back in 1996. Oddly enough, when a very attractive ticket when you think about it, and proceeded to get absolutely massacred by Bill Clinton.
Well, it was a shotgun marriage. Bob Dole and Jack Kemp never liked each other. They had different views on economic policy from day one. When they both ran for president in 1988, when Ronald Reagan was retiring after 8 years, both Jack Kemp and Bob Dole did not disguise their contempt for each other. That was a time when Vice President George Bush won the nomination. So it was really a shotgun marriage. But, you know, on paper, of course, it would have been a great ticket, but nobody's was going to stop the peace and prosperity ticket of Clinton and Al Gore in 1996.
We had actual votes being cast yesterday in the city of Detroit, and a former NBA star, Dave Bing of the Detroit Pistons, now mayor of Detroit.
Right. I mean, lots of luck, Dave Bing. He may find the NBA much easier than running the city of Detroit. This is to fill the last 8 months of the Kwame Kilpatrick term. He's a former mayor who resigned under scandal, sentenced to 3 months in jail, things like that. Dave Bing defeated Kenneth Cockrell, who was the acting mayor when Kilpatrick left. But there'll be another election. There'll be another primary election in August, another full general election in November.
Act as elected as mayor is to go to a fundraiser.
Exactly right. But I mean, it's probably the worst job in America. It's a tough run city. There's unemployment in Michigan. It's awful. Detroit is even worse. Businesses have been leaving the city for decades. You know, you kind of wonder why you want this. But voters, it was a narrow victory, and they think that Dave Bing could do it.
We'll get to the trivia question in just a minute. But first, two governors facing decisions. Governor Baldacci in Maine, Governor Lynch in New Hampshire, both Democrats who said they are a little unsure about gay marriage. The legislature in both legislatures have passed gay marriage bills, and today the governor in Maine signed it.
Right, and that's the big news of the day. Maine is now the fifth state following Connecticut, Iowa, Massachusetts, and Vermont to pass same-sex marriages. Governor Baldacci, who is term-limited, cannot run for re-election, had hemmed and hawed. He said he opposes same-sex marriage, but he signed it. John Lynch, who is running for re-election next year, has not said what he would do. The guess among many people is that he may just agree to it without agreeing to it, let it pass without his signature to it. But it'll be very interesting what there'll be voter reaction there is to it. But it seems to be spreading. Governor David Patterson in New York is pushing through a same-sex marriage bill. Rhode Island may have one once the Republican governor leaves office after 2010. All of New England seems to be now in that same-sex marriage.
We should note that in Maine there is a provision for what's called a people's veto. If people gather enough signatures for a ballot referendum, the question of gay marriage would go to the ballot in November. So that remains to be seen. Anyway, we have some people who think they know the answer to this week's trivia question. Remind us, Ken.
It is Jack Kemp, who passed away on Saturday. He ran for president and vice president, served in the cabinet, and served in the House. Who's the last person to do all four of those things?
Let's go to Joe, and Joe's with us from Chico in California.
Well, I'm going to go way back and say John Quincy Adams.
John Quincy Adams. Well, he wasn't the last one to do it.
Well, yeah, I guess that's the best way of saying it. He was
president and vice president and member of the House.
And he did serve in the cabinet, but he was not the last person.
Not the last person to do it. But nice try, Joe.
Well, I lose nothing.
No, you lose absolutely nothing. Let's see if we can go next to this is Richard. Richard with us from Arnold in Missouri.
Yes, sir. I say Gerald Ford.
Gerald Ford was vice president, was president.
He did serve in Congress, but he never served in the cabinet. I mean, he went from Congress to vice president to president, and that was it. He never served in the cabinet.
Nice try, though.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Let's see if we can go now to Joel. Joel with us from San Carlos, California.
Yeah, hi.
Go ahead, please.
I'm going to guess that it would be George Herbert Walker Bush.
George Herbert Walker Bush, the first President Bush.
Ran for president in 1980, was elected vice president in 1980.
Twice.
Right. And he did serve in Congress as a member of Congress from Texas.
And served as Central Intelligence Agency Director.
And U.N. Ambassador, but those were not cabinet positions.
Ooh.
So he did not serve in the cabinet.
Very close, Joel. Yeah. Very close, Joel. You get two sleeves. Bye-bye. Let's see if we can go next to, this is Jason from East Lansing in Michigan.
Hello.
Hi, Jason. You're on the air. Go ahead.
I don't got an answer for your question, but can I talk about Mr. Kemp?
Mr. Kemp, can we put you on hold and get back to you?
Yes.
All right. Thanks very much. Let's see if I find the right button there. Okay. And let's see if we can go next to Robert. Robert with us from the Outer Banks in North Carolina.
Yes. How about Bobby Kennedy?
Bobby Kennedy certainly ran for president.
Right. And he did serve in the cabinet, but he never served in the House.
And the Senate, yes.
And he never ran for vice president.
Okay.
All right. Thanks very much. And let's see if we can go now to John in Guilford, Connecticut.
Hello, I was going to say Hubert Humphrey.
Hubert Humphrey, also known as the Happy Warrior, right, as Jack Kemp was known. Of course, Al Smith, I think, was the original Happy Warrior.
Ran for president, ran for vice president, and served in Congress, and served in the Senate, never in the House, and never in the cabinet either. So he just president and vice president for Hubert Humphrey.
So I get one sleeve.
One sleeve and maybe a shirt tail. Thanks for the call, John. And here's this from Stroh in Salt Lake City. My answer is Lloyd Benson.
Lloyd Benson is the correct answer. Served, ran for president in 1976, dropped out shortly afterwards, was Michael Dukakis' running mate in 88, served in the Clinton cabinet as Secretary of Treasury, and that's it. And he served in the House in the 1950s.
So ding, 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 ding.
Lloyd Benson
gets a no-prize T-shirt. That'll go out in the mail. And so we have your email address. We'll get back to you there, and I'll try not to lose it between now and the end of the show. We'll just tuck it aside over here. And meantime, let's get back to Jason. Jason with us from East Lansing. You wanted to talk about Jack Kemp? Jason, are you there? Jason's listening to the radio. Anyway, let's see if we can talk about Jim Bunning, the senator from Kentucky, who, he may be not no longer running for re-election.
Right. He has said all along that he will run to spite Republican leaders. He, even though he is a Republican and he is a conservative, he's been on the outs with many members of his own party, including Mitch McConnell, who's a Senate Republican leader, also from Kentucky. The two of them do not like each other. It seems clear that Mitch McConnell would love for another Republican to take his place. But Jim Bunning has said this week, first time he's hinted, he said, look, if I can't raise enough money, and he'll probably need at least $7 to $10 million to run for third term. If he can't raise enough money, he may not seek another term. And right now, he only has $400,000 in his bank account. That could be him on the phone right now.
That could be him on the phone. Yes. I have to confess. No, that is not Ken's cell phone going off. It's my cell phone going off. And probably somebody calling to tell me that I'm on the radio. we've done the same-sex marriage. Excuse me, just a little flustered by my cell phone. A couple of governors down in the polls. You mentioned David Paterson of New York earlier, and also John Corzine of New Jersey.
John Corzine is in big trouble. Of course, you know, it's hard to imagine in a state so blue as that, but Corzine is, you know, has really dug his own grave. Chris Christie, who's a former U.S. attorney there, will be the likely Republican candidate. There's an article in the New York Times today that mentions that Corzine would love to damage Christie in the primary by supporting a more conservative Republican. In other words, try to damage your future opponent by building up somebody else in the Republican primary.
But, and that's an interesting tactic. It's worked sometimes in the past. But
Gray Davis successfully did that in California when he ripped down Richard Reardon, who they thought was going to be his strongest opponent, and they got a weaker Republican to run against him in 2002.
And should we even mention the word at this point? Minnesota?
Well, Minnesota, again, nothing has changed. The Minnesota Supreme Court, of course, will hear Norm Coleman's challenge on June 1st, not until June 1st. But my great new theory is now for David Souter. Here's what happens. President Obama names Amy Klobuchar to the Supreme Court. Tim Pawlenty then names Norm Coleman to fill Amy Klobuchar's Senate seat. And both Coleman and Franken are in the Senate together.
But who gets seniority?
Exactly.
I will end this segment with an email from Jim in Annapolis, Maryland. With loving respect from an original Buffalo Bills fan, old quarterbacks never die. They just fade back and pass. A tribute to Jack Kemp there. We'll be back to talk about the politics of picking a Supreme Court justice in a few minutes. Alan Simpson, the former senator and member of the Judiciary Committee, will tell us what can make or break a nominee. If you'd like to get in on that conversation, give us a call, 800-989-8255, or zap us an email. The address is talk@npr.org. Political junkie Ken Rudin will stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And take over this beautiful land. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. It's Wednesday, Political Junkie Day. Ken Rudin is with us, as always. You can keep up with his blog when you're not catching him here on the radio at npr.org/junkie. And much of the buzz in Washington this week about the Supreme Court, specifically who President Obama will name as a replacement for Justice David Souter, who plans to retire. To talk more about the nomination and the confirmation process, we're joined by former Republican Senator Alan Simpson from 1979 until 1997. He represented the state of Wyoming and served on the Senate Judiciary Committee. And he joins us now by phone from his home in the Cowboy State. Senator Simpson, nice to have you back on the program.
Neil, if I knew that Ken Rudin was there in the studio, I never would have responded to this.
Well,
that rascal.
I also have to begin with a correction. Earlier I stated that John Quincy Adams served as VP. Of course, I was confused him with his father, who was a vice president, but John Quincy Adams never did. And, of course, well, you served with him, right, Senator Simpson?
No, not with John Quincy Adams. No. No, where were you? I didn't hear that last part, Neil.
No, that's quite all right. We were just having a little fun at your expense.
Yes, well, Strom Thurmond served with him.
Yes, he did.
Yes, of course.
But they were, I'm going to leave it right there.
That's right.
Let's go back to this this upcoming nomination. When you heard that there was an opening on the Supreme Court, when you were a member of the Senate Judiciary Committee, what was the first thing you thought about?
Well, you shuddered. That's the first thing you did. You thought, this is going to be grueling, it's going to be ghastly. It didn't start out that way. When I came in 79, things weren't quite at that level. But, of course, when the Bork hearing changed everything forever, because You remember Perchuk, Mike Perchuk, a good friend of mine, I enjoyed him very much, wrote a book called The People Rising. And I said, well, you've just written the Bible as to how to cremate a Supreme Court nominee. And sure enough, the Bork thing was ghastly, then the Clarence Thomas thing. And yet, after the chaos of a tough one would come one like Scalia. I think Nino's toughest question was, do you play the piano and sing? And he said, yes, I do. And they said, how do you feel on abortion? He said, oh, we wouldn't touch that. That may come up. Sandra Day handled that the same way. She said, I'm not going to respond to that. That may come up when I'm on the court. But man, oh, man, everybody else got ground up in abortion and gay, lesbian issues, social issues. It's a terrible experience.
You mentioned Robert Bork. There were campaigns for the first time in my memory against him. This is a clip from an ad run by the People for the American Way, a liberal advocacy group narrated by Gregory Peck.
This is Gregory Peck. Robert Bork wants to be a Supreme Court justice, but the record shows that he has a strange idea of what justice is. He defended poll taxes and literacy tests, which kept many Americans from voting. He opposed the civil rights law that ended whites-only signs at lunch counters. He doesn't believe the Constitution protects your right to privacy. And he thinks that freedom of speech does not apply to literature and art and music.
And he probably hates apple pie. There are ads like that. They made their first appearance, and now they are commonplace, Senator Simpson.
Yeah, those were tough. Those were really, really out to lunch, because Bork had an amazing record on controversial cases. But when you go back into somebody's law school treatise or something like that, nobody can win that. I said once, and I meant it so seriously, that we'll never have a Robert Bork or Lawrence Tribe on the Supreme Court because they write with zeal and yeast and they're into passionate causes. And that's a shame. I think that's a real shame.
Ken?
Senator Simpson, I don't know if we've ever met, but I have a question about the difference this time is that, unlike previous nominees, you have made perhaps 60 votes on the Democratic side in the Senate. So in some ways, you could make the case that Barack Obama could put through the Supreme Court almost anybody he chooses. Do you agree with that?
Well, I think that I don't think Obama is a confrontational man. I think we all ought to think about trying to make things work, and I think he's trying very hard to do that. I don't think he's going to pick an extreme person philosophically, ideologically, that is going to just make Republicans slaver at the mouth. I don't think he's going to do that. If he does, let me tell you, in the U.S. Senate, there are enough tricks to be played from that hand where you can screw up anything.
Jeff Sessions of Alabama, the new ranking member, the highest ranking Republican on the Senate Judiciary Committee, said today that he would like to abide by the deal arrived at 4 years ago that averted filibusters against some of former President George W. Bush's judicial nominees. And that set a standard that should not be discarded lightly, suggesting he does not want to use the filibuster against a Supreme Court nominee. And also said that in a phone conversation with the president yesterday, President Obama said he was not planning to nominate a bomb thrower. So that would seem to go along with what you were just saying there.
Well, I hadn't read that, but it certainly meets what I would describe to. And I think that those 14 that got together from, you know, within the middle, both sides, there are enough people there that aren't going to see a filibuster take down a Supreme Court nominee. I just don't see that at all. But it's going to be, it'll be raucous. It was the worst time of my life, of all of the 18 years, was the Clarence Thomas hearing, and people are still after him or her. I say, give it up, get work, go sit under a tree. But I had a wife and a daughter and a mother, one of whom had been through much more degrees of harassment, if you will, humiliation than that, and I just lost my marbles. And I looked like it. It was the worst possible thing. I looked like somebody said I look like a cross between Frankenstein and olive oil.
that's not a good look.
No, yes, no. It's frail like olive oil and monstrous like Frankenstein. Anyway, tough. But the real one is we've gone away from what is the essence. What is, you want a person with good judicial temperament, knowledge of the law, experience, many of these people on the court now have never tried a case. I don't think that's right.
Because they're looking for judges so young, they don't have a record.
Well, that's true, but some of those who are old on there didn't have any real trial experience or maybe corporate law. But, you know, there's a list of what you would want in a judge and temperament and intellect, and that's all out the window, principally on one issue, which is abortion. I happen to be pro-choice. I believe abortion is a deeply intimate and personal decision. It shouldn't even be part of a platform, but that's not the view of many in my party. But and then these gay-lesbian issues. Now you have a third state today, maybe a fourth, that are approving gay marriage.
With Maine, it's up to five.
Yeah, that's what I heard today.
Yeah. 800-989-8255. We're talking with former Republican Senator Alan Simpson of Wyoming about the politics of selecting a Supreme Court justice. And let's see if we can get Marshall on the line. Marshall calling from Statesville in North Carolina.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my question. And I'm delighted that Senator Simpson is on the line because I've long admired him. I'm a liberal Democrat, and I'll just premise by saying that. The other day, President Barack Obama made a comment about one of the justices he had admired was Chief Justice Warren, who, of course, led a very liberal court for quite a few years. And if President Obama should nominate someone who has the kinds of views that Chief Justice Warren did, that is to say an activist judge, who believes that the Constitution is subject to interpretation in light of changing circumstances, facts, and times. My question is, will the Republicans try to filibuster that nominee? And I have a kind of a follow-up that perhaps Senator Simpson could address as well, and that is this. A few years ago, when President George Bush nominated Samuel Alito to the Supreme Court, as I recall, some Democrats talked about filibustering the nomination. The Republicans then threatened what they called the nuclear option.
Yes.
They would change the rules so that 51 votes could approve this this nominee. And the Democrats, a group of six got together that included people like Senator Collins from Maine and Senator McCain and so forth, and they worked out a compromise, and the Alito nomination went through. So my question is this. If President Obama nominates a liberal, someone in the sort of style and image of Chief Justice Warren, former Chief Justice Warren, are the Republicans going to filibuster that? And if so, should the Democrats threaten the same type of nuclear option that the Republicans threatened to use against them?
And just to reiterate, Senator Sessions, the chairman, the ranking member on the Senate Judiciary Committee, the ranking Republican, said he's not inclined to filibuster.
And can I just add one thing to this? Remember, also during that Alito nomination, Barack Obama voted to filibuster the Alito nomination despite the agreement of the group of moderates.
And now we're going to let you talk, Senator Simpson.
Well, no. You remember, too, what Ike Eisenhower said toward the end of his term as these decisions came down. He said about Warren, he said, "It's the worst damn mistake I ever made." And he was appalled because he thought Warren was had a different philosophy. Anyway, Warren was a great, in many ways, certainly a great judge. But I do not see any aspect of, especially with what I've just heard you say that Sessions, Senator Sessions has said, I don't see any nuclear option at all. It's a destructive thing. Once you take the great, it's like a great wheel with hobnail boots on it. And once you play that game and do one, that hobnail boot will come and kick you in the fanny in about 3 years. You can't play with the filibuster. Sometimes it's going to save you. It's going to be your salvation. Another time it's your greatest frustration. So nuclear options will not work, I don't think, in anything, regardless of where you get with how many numbers are on both sides.
Ken?
Senator Simpson, one quick thing, though. You know, Arlen Specter, when he was chairman of the Judiciary Committee, he shepherded, basically, the John Roberts and the Alito nominations. Now he's the most junior guy on Judiciary. How do you think, how do you see the change in Arlen Specter's situation?
Well, Arlen is—he's a fighter. He's a survivor, and he's going to be a Democrat. But if they're going to count on him for—they already lost him on card check. You don't ever put Arlen in a box and say he's a Republican now or a Democrat now, and he's going to do this or that. Forget it. But Arlen Specter is a force, and he'll be that way with regard to whatever he does on Judiciary, whether he's in the in the ranking member or whether he's on the tail end. But they're going to put up, he's going to put up someone which is not going to send shockwaves. He's not, you don't do that in the first 120 days, is send up Mr. Joe Partisan or Miss Queen Partisan of all time. You're not going to do that because everybody will be looking at that one. They're not paying attention to immigration and health care like they will this Supreme Court nominee.
When you're on the committee and there's a contentious nomination, do you get lobbied by people from both sides? Does your phone ever stop ringing?
Well, I never had an unlisted phone number, so my phone never stopped ringing. To go through all of public life and never have an unlisted number leaves you with a lot of creative conversations.
I bet it does. Alan Simpson.
You big jerk. Stuff like that.
That was just Ken calling.
Well, I heard that.
Senator Simpson with us on the line from Wyoming, which he represented in the United States Senate for many years and served on the Senate Judiciary Committee. You're listening to the Political Junkie segment on Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Let's get John on the line. John calling from Miami.
Yes, gentlemen, thanks for taking my call. And, Senator, thank you for your great work for our nation. I really appreciate what you do for us, or did, I should say. My question is this. I've heard quite a bit of talk about having to replace judges with judges that have similar views as the one they're replacing, or maybe replacing women with women or anything like that. And I'm wondering, do you think that's really going to happen this time where President Obama is going to say, okay, we need to replace with another judge with a similar kind of political views and just replace him with the same judge, when instead of really looking for someone who's going to be unbiased and really look towards the law the way the law should be? And I know, like you said, that many of these judges have no experience in trial as a judge. They're just lawyers or someone that maybe not even really practice law. Mm-hmm. What do you think?
I think he's going to look for someone very much in the model of David Souter. Souter, I think, I know him. I visited with him in chambers a time or two after I'd finished my work. A fascinating man, ready to go home. And I think that don't forget, he's listed in the quote liberal aspects of the court. And I don't know any reason why Obama would want to go any further to the left than David Souter, who's not a lefty. He's a progressive. He's a liberal, and nothing wrong with that term. Not as ugly as the word conservative. Why have we distorted these words of conservative and liberal into these gargoyles? I don't know. But anyway, I think he's going to pick someone very much in that mold.
And do you suspect that he's, as many say, going to pick a woman?
Well, I think that's very possible. Sure. Sandra Day, of course, I was there. That was the historic one. And when she came to see me, her son and my son were frat rat brothers down at Colorado College. I said, who do I have to kill to get this done for you? And she's just absolutely one of the most splendid women, and I think Ruth... I voted for seven of those people on the court. This is rather startling. I was there 18 years, and I personally voted for every one of them, regardless of their philosophy, because I felt they were good lawyers with good brains and would do what they had to do. And so... there it is. I don't get caught in this huge backwash of how pure are you. Maybe because my own life was filled with rather checkerboard activities.
John, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
And you mentioned experience. There's also some thought that maybe the president ought not to go for someone who spent his or her entire life in a robe, nominate somebody like Governor Granholm of Michigan.
Well, I think that's very possible. I think that there's a lot of background chatter, if you will, about time to get someone on there who has some practical legal experience in the courtroom or in the actual practice of human beings standing in front of you crying and saying, I need a divorce, or my kid's smoking pot and flunking out of school. Those lawyers are hard to find now. If somebody came in with a human deep feeling, these guys will say, well, we have an intern down the hall who takes care of that. I don't deal with humans. I just crank out stuff and make money.
Senator Simpson, thank you so much for your time today. We appreciate it.
Okay, great to hear you both.
Alan Simpson, a Republican from Wyoming, served in the United States Senate from 1979 to 1997. As he said, he voted for 7 of the 9 people currently serving on the United States Supreme Court. Ken Rudin with us here, as he is every Thursday, in Studio 3A. Ken, as always, thanks very much.
Thanks, Neil.
And you can check out Ken's blog, the Political Junkie blog, at npr.org. Coming up, the perfect job. No, political junkies filled. The position tending a tropical paradise in the Pacific was just filled. Sorry. So what is your dream job? Give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.